I'm Diane Orson with Connecticut Public Radio News. Security has been stepped up at Jewish synagogues around the state. Today is Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Remembrance Day, and as people gather to honor the 6 million lives lost, they'll also remember those killed in shootings at synagogues in California and Pennsylvania. Today also marks 40 years to the day that a videotaping project began in New Haven. A local psychiatrist and Holocaust survivor and a Connecticut journalist began recording the life stories of survivors. Over time, it grew into a large-scale effort housed at Yale University. Now known as the Fortunoff Video Archive for Holocaust Testimonies, the collection has more than 4,400 testimonies recorded in countries around the world in almost a dozen different languages. The project is widely seen as having pioneered the use of video testimony to record eyewitness accounts of important events in history. Ahead, we're going to listen to voices of concentration camp survivors. But first, Archive Director Stephen Naren. During a recent visit to the collection, I asked how they do their interviews.
The most important factor in interviewing a survivor of the Holocaust is to act as an empathic listener to their story. So we don't come to an interview with a set list of questions to ask, routine questions. The goal is to provide a space for the survivor where they feel comfortable. We try to hand agency over to the survivor and let the survivor lead the interview. We see the interviewer relationship as analogous to a teacher-student relationship where the survivor is the teacher and the listener is the student. Now, we want our students to be very well informed, and in fact, the interviewers who are still recording testimony have been doing this since the 1980s.
Let's listen now to the voices of two Holocaust survivors.
I was a child during the war when the Germans came into Czechoslovakia. I was not yet 6 years old. I remember coming home one day and seeing my mother sewing on the star on my coat. But the worst part for me at that time was watching the transports. We would hear certain sounds of boots on the street. And we used to live in terror of these boots. And we lived on the fourth floor in the apartment, and my parents were both deaf. And I had a deaf sister, so I became the ears. I would have to warn them that the transport was coming. Later on, in Bergen-Belsen, I realized that my sister was being watched by the camp doctor. He had hoped to be able to use my sister for scientific research.
In concentration camps and labor camps, there was a preoccupation with survival and how can I make the next day. But then after what was called liberation, actually the realization of liberation was not vivid with me, was not real with me for a long time. But I remember during the years 45, 46, 47, even up to 48, I would find myself crying and quite frequently and feeling that there's no one around me that cares what I do or what I don't do. A feeling of, yes, I'm alive, but that's it. The rest doesn't matter.
Excerpts from testimony by Holocaust survivors Renee H. and Brooke G. Full names are withheld to protect confidentiality. Back at the archive, I asked Director Stephen Naren about how these voices inform our understanding of what happened.
In the early years of scholarship on the Holocaust, history was being written based on German documentation. Germans were meticulous in their documentation of the Holocaust. But the voices of the victims and the experience of the victims was absent or less present. The establishment of the video archive in the 1970s really shifted the way historians think about sources. Now it's almost unheard of for a historian of the Holocaust not to include the voices of the victims.
So as we move farther and farther away from the Holocaust,
I wonder if you could talk about how these voices can remain vibrant and real to younger generations.
Well, that is our goal. And the way we're trying to tackle this challenge is to make the materials more readily available. We've digitized the collection. In September, we plan to release an audio podcast series based on the testimonies.
Let's listen now to one more voice. Rachel G. survived the Holocaust in hiding. Here she describes how her mother found a priest to take her in.
I was born in Brussels, Belgium. I had a very happy childhood until the Nazi came in. And until that note came from the school that we could not go to school, that's when really the whole thing started. And my mother, right away where we lived, the landlady had a nephew who was a priest in a little town outside Brussels. And she contacted the landlady and she said, you know, they're taking away the children. Can you do something about my daughter? Can you take her, hide her somewhere? And the lady says, yes, I have this nephew who's a priest. Yeah, I will ask him. And that was the arrangement. I remember my father crying like a baby in the middle of the street. And he explained to me, don't forget, you're a Jewish little girl. We're going to see you again, but you must do that. You must go away. And the last time I saw my father was on my birthday. He took a chance and went to the priest's house to see me.
Rachel was eventually reunited with her mother after the war. The Fortunoff Video Archive for Holocaust Testimonies at Yale holds an event this evening with experts and excerpts from the collection. Among those attending will be one of the first survivors to describe her experience. To learn more and to watch some of the riveting testimony, visit our website, wnpr.org. Diane Orson, Connecticut Public Radio.